Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Thank you for joining us on another edition of the Holistic Survival Show. This is show number 11, and I'm your host, Jason Hartman. Got an interesting interview for you today with a man who has not filed a tax return in a long, long time. And that means he hasn't paid any taxes. That's pretty cool, huh? Do you wish you could do that without getting thrown in jail? Well, hear his story, and who knows? He has challenged the rule. I know you've probably heard about this before. There is a group of people out there that is fairly vocal that says that the IRS does not have the right to tax people. There's no provision in the law. There have been movies made about this. There have been documentaries made about it, books written about it, I'm sure, articles, etc. And this man actually did it. So this is going to the source. This is not a hypothetical. This is not a theoretical. This is real. This guy really did it. You'll hear his story firsthand right from the man who actually avoided paying taxes for many, many years, and he does not file a tax return. So you'll hear his story firsthand. And since we are all about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times, this show is focused on profits, on money, on financial stuff. Also, listen to my Creating Wealth show. If you use iTunes, just type Jason Hartman in the iTunes store. And if you'd like to get it directly off the web, go to jasonhartman.com, click on Education, then Radio Shows, and you can get the Creating Wealth show, which is all about the money aspect. We talk about investments, we talk about finance, we talk about the economy, we talk about predictions for the future, and we also talk about our new focus, which is building income through multiple streams, home-based businesses, internet marketing, etc., etc. So I think you'll like that show a lot. We have 126 shows up now, and I think you'll really enjoy those. So join us for the Creating Wealth show as well. And my other company, Platinum Properties Investor Network, is hosting a Creating Wealth in Today's Economy Bootcamp in Costa Mesa, California on November 14th. We would love to have you join us for that. Info there at jasonhartman.com. And of course, visit the holisticsurvival.com website for deeper information that you're hearing about in this show. Let's go to the interview with Tom Crier, and we'll see you on the next show. It's my pleasure to welcome Tom Crier to the show. He is a lawyer based in Shreveport, Louisiana, and he heads up an organization called Truth Attack. That's truthattack.org. Tom, welcome. Great to have you.
Great to be on.
Well, tell us a little bit about what Truth Attack does.
Well, Truth Attack is an organization that I formed back whenever I was preparing for trial, when I was indicted for tax evasion for refusing to file or pay the income tax unless the federal government could show me a lawful duty on my part to do so, and they couldn't. So we were at an impasse, so they turned around, and since they couldn't come up with a law justifying their expectation that I file income tax returns and pay income tax, they did the only rational thing, I guess, left, and that is to issue a false indictment against me. So while that was I was preparing for that, I formed an organization called Truth Attack, and at that particular point, the primary purpose of Truth Attack was to expose the fraud that the Internal Revenue Service has been perpetrating on the American public for many, many years now. And that is that the working American is liable for the income tax, for starters. They also have been perpetrating a fraud on the American public as to what the real meaning of income is. They have fostered and developed a vernacular meaning of income to mean whatever comes in. But income is a legal term, and it has a specific legal meaning that the Supreme Court has defined as being the profit or the gain derived from, squeezed out of, any transaction. So if you don't have profit or gain, or if you can't squeeze it out and say this much is profit and that much isn't, then there isn't any income. And they've been lying to the public about that. For example, they say that everything that a working man gets in his paycheck for his labor is 100% profit. But because according to them, his labor has what they call a basis of zero. But if you look at the law, there's absolutely no basis for their zero basis rule. There's no law that allows them or justifies their considering a man's labor as being worthless. The man traded something for that money, so it can't be all profit. They consider it as 100% profit so that they can consider everything that a working man receives as being income. Then that's a fraud.
You're saying that the person has traded their time and their effort, and so it's not a zero basis, if you will.
No, it isn't. Yeah, because the Supreme Court, Jason, has held repeatedly that a man's labor is his property. So a man's labor is recognized as his property. He owns it. Not only that, but our life is recognized as our property. They can't take your life without due process. Well, that's part of your property. Your rights are the same way. They're considered to be your property. Well, whenever a man takes his property, his labor, and he gives it to another in exchange for money, that's an exchange. That is not something received for nothing. Now, the Supreme Court has said that in order for income to occur, first off, they said that what comes in is not income and was never intended to be income. But they call it gross proceeds, or what we call today gross receipts. Walmart takes in millions of dollars every day, but they don't consider that to be income.
Only the net.
Only their net.
Right.
Well, what about the little guy at the door that's welcoming everybody to Walmart? The little welcome guy. Every penny that he receives, they say that's profit. And it wasn't. It was received at the expense of time out of his life. It was received at the expense of effort on his part. It was received at the expense of his talent of dealing with people in a pleasant manner. It was at the expense of giving up a portion of his work life, which is, albeit unknown in duration, is definitely finite. So he's depleting his life. He's depleting his work lifespan. Just like if you were selling parts of your yard at $1 a shovelful, you're depleting your yard. You know, at some point in time, you're going to have nothing but a hole. Well, at some point in time, our labor, our work life is going to be completely spent, consumed, depleted, because we gave it to somebody else. Now, that's property. And yet the IRS contends that that property is worth zero, and that anything that you receive in exchange for your mere worthless labor is profit. And I, for one, am not only is that repugnant to good sense, but it's repugnant to me from a principle standpoint, because the labor and the skill and the knowledge that I apply for the benefit of my clients is certainly not worthless. And I would resent that. That seems like the American worker should resent it.
You're absolutely right. You know, Tom, many people have tried not to pay taxes. They've cited the apparent fact, which, you know, I know you agree with, that there is no law that allows the IRS to tax people at a federal level. This argument's been put forth many, many times. And the people that do it, from Irwin Schiff, Peter Schiff's father, he's in jail, I guess, still for income tax evasion and being a tax protester. They seem to somehow put everybody in jail if they don't pay the tax. What happened to you in your story? Did you serve time over this?
I was very fortunate to get a jury that was attentive and receptive. Uh-huh. But in most cases, juries come in believing that the world is flat. And
right.
Everybody knows that the world is flat, and anybody who says otherwise must be lying about what they believe, because nobody could possibly believe that. But in this case, in my case, I was very fortunate. I had a jury that was receptive, that was open-minded, and that listened carefully to what I had to say. I think it might have also helped that my credentials outweighed those of the judge and the prosecutor put together.
So you were able to not pay tax and not go to jail?
Yeah, right.
That's fantastic. So
I haven't filed taxes since 1993.
Wow. Why isn't your case a precedent that everybody else can use as a basis to not pay income tax?
Well, a verdict is a finding of guilt or innocence. And that doesn't set a precedent, because whether somebody is or isn't guilty doesn't have anything to do with a finding of law or a finding of a case, any more than O.J.'s acquittal set a precedent that people who kill people shouldn't be prosecuted but jail.
When does it become a precedent, though? Because certainly there's case law and legislative.
It becomes a precedent when a court of law makes a ruling to that effect, that this is, in fact, the law. The problem that you have there is that until my case, nobody had ever raised, although they had raised the issue that you're talking about here, the absence of a liability provision, the fair and equal exchange of labor for money generating no profit, they have never raised it as a matter of law. It's always been raised as a matter of this is my belief, and therefore I'm acting in good faith, and therefore I do not have criminal intent. And if what I did was without criminal intent, then I haven't committed a crime. So that was the way it's been raised before, was that with respect to their good faith belief. In my case, I filed a motion with the court to dismiss charges based on these legal issues. Now, the district court, which is not a court that sets or makes law, the district court just ignored those arguments and denied the motion without reasons. The reason it did so without reasons is because it could not come up with any reason to argue or dispute the contentions that I was making, because the law is written in black and white, and it's either there or it isn't there. The only way that they could come up with an argument that I am liable is to show me a statute that says I am liable. That's the only way to be made liable for a tax, any tax, is to have it say that these are the people who are liable for this tax. And if there isn't a provision saying that, then nobody writes a check, right? Tax never gets paid. It's sitting there, but there's nobody to pay it. That's why it has to be there. Every other federal tax and tax code has a specific section defining exactly who is required to pay the tax.
I know that every listener now is thinking to themselves, as am I, how can I not pay taxes? Do you recommend this for other people, or are they going to risk their freedom?
If you look at our website at truthattack.org, if you look there, you'll find an error on the very number one FAQ. Mm-hmm. Is, does this mean I don't have to file tax returns and pay taxes? And we tell them, look, it's like telling a mugger, I don't have to give you my money because you have no right to it. Go ahead and shoot. No, I don't think you're going to do that. Well, what we have is 100,000 muggers on the government payroll that are out there mugging and extorting and conning money out of people right and left. But they're big, and they've got the government behind them, and you can't call the police on them because the police are afraid of them. You can't call a judge on them because the judges are afraid of them. And so even though they don't have any right to the money, just like the mugger with the gun, he may not have a right to take your billfold, but he's got the gun. I tell people, don't put yourself in harm's way. Stay away from the teeth and talons. Go ahead and pay tribute to their power, not to their right, but go ahead and pay tribute to their power and call it a remain free to fight for another year tax if you have to hold your nose and do it. But don't let them, because if you don't pay it, they'll take it. And when they do that, they don't just take the money, they take it off at the elbow. So go ahead and pay the tribute, get them off of your back, and then spend every minute getting your money's worth by going out there every day and doing something to spread the word and make people aware of the truth. It's like trying to break a hypnotic spell. The public is under this hypnotic spell that everything that the government has told them has always been true. Now, the amazing thing about this, Jason, is that if you ask people, do you think that the government is a credible source of information, and they will actually laugh at you.
I was about to laugh myself.
You were going to laugh yourself. But and if you ask them, do they believe what the government has told us, everything they know about the Kennedy assassination? Has the government told us the truth about Waco? Have they told us the truth about Oklahoma City bombing?
Or Ruby
Have
Ridge
they told
or
us
everything
the whole
else.
Truth
yeah.
About 9/11.
Right.
And they will tell you, to a man, woman, and even children, no, they're not. They're lying to us about that. They're not. They haven't told us the truth. Now, but if you ask them about something that actually affects them, like, do you believe the government is telling you the truth about their right to take money out of your paycheck? They'll say, yeah. The last thing they want to do is get between a mama bear and his cub, or between the government and your money. And they know. I mean, people know because the government spends a great deal of time, effort, and money and letting people know that if you don't believe us, we're going to hurt you. We're going to make your life. I had one guy tell me that he sat down with the IRS agent that was trying to work him over, and he says, look, he said, let me show you what I've got here. And he said, now, can you show me where I'm wrong anywhere? And the guy shook his head after looking at it, and he says, well, no. He said, I can't tell you that you're wrong, but I can tell you this. If you raise that, whether you're right or wrong, we're going to make your life nothing but pure hell. It's worth it, whether it's right or wrong. Believe me, it's worth it to you to do what we tell you, whether the law requires it or not. They know And a lot of them don't. A lot of them are just as snowed as the general public. I know a guy that went for years as a special agent of the CID, Criminal Investigation Division. And whenever he set out, just as I had, to debunk these so-called claims that there is no liability provision or claims that income is not everything that comes in, you know, his object was to show them up and say, no, you're wrong. Here it is. And he made the same discovery that I did. And he brought it to the attention of his superiors. He says, folks, we're violating the law. What are we going to do? We can't keep violating the law. We took an oath. And he got a memo back saying, we will provide you with the paperwork necessary to submit your resignation. And they escorted him out of the building under guard. He has since resigned because he cannot violate his oath. But that lets you know that they're stealing. They know that they're cheating. A lot of them don't, just like he didn't for a long time, but a lot of them do.
So the truthattack.org, basically what you do is your mission is to put government back in its box, as you say, which I couldn't agree with more. The government has become this out-of-control drug addict that we keep feeding, and we keep making it worse by giving it money. What are the other tentacles, if you will, other than the IRS and the income tax, that you want to put back and get back into its proper size?
Well, we feel that the first tentacle, you know, the freedom movement is not big enough to take the whole government on, because otherwise we would have won by now, because we're right and it's wrong. If we take it on a part at a time. So our strategy is to go on the offensive, have all of the freedom movement groups continue with their defensive measures to hold the ground that we haven't lost yet. And then Truth Attack lines up behind one issue and goes on the offensive and claims that turf back, gets our rights, our freedom back. And one of our rights is the rule of law instead of the rule of man or agency or bureaucrat. And the law says that we're not liable for the income tax and that they don't have a right to collect it. So under the rule of law, we have a right to demand that they obey the law. And so that's our first tentacle, because that strikes at the roots of the tree of tyranny. And it also strikes at the very heart of the issue here, and that is the government is lying about the extent of its authority. The second tentacle is going to be where all of this came from, Jason. And I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theory or one of these nuts you see on television, but if you're familiar with the history of the Federal Reserve, and if people knew about the Federal Reserve and what it really is, instead of what it's portrayed as, they would be up and getting ropes out, and pitchforks and torches would be breaking out.
As I mentioned to you before, we had G. Edward Griffin on the show, and we've had several Federal Reserve historians.
The fact that the Federal Reserve is not owned or controlled by the government.
It's the least federal organization around.
Exactly. It's not as federal as FedEx.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
no question.
And, you know, it's a privately owned bank that has taken over control of our currency. And they have taken, if you had a stock certificate for Exxon for 100 shares, you know, in other words, you didn't leave it in a street name account. You got it in a form of a certificate. And I told you, hey, look, give me that 100 share certificate and I'll give you this. And I write out with a crayon certificate misspelled 100 shares. I don't put any company on it. I don't put any value on it. I don't sign it with anything. I copy and paste, cut out and paste some signatures off of some fancy looking documents. And I make it look kind of like that certificate, but it doesn't say that. And I say, let me have your 100 shares certificate there. I'll give you this certificate in its place. You know, would you hand over your 100 shares certificate? Well, we have.
Yeah.
We had silver certificates. We had silver certificates backed up by silver in Fort Knox. And we had gold certificates, and we had silver and gold coin. It represented real value, and that was constitutional money. But when the Federal Reserve takes it over, they've taken all of our silver certificates. They've taken all of our certificates of ownership of part of that silver in Fort Knox, and they've given us a certificate for $1. $1 of what?
Ayn Rand has a great quote about that, and I can't remember it exactly, but she just says that the government comes and it basically takes the gold and the silver and leaves the rest of us with a bunch of worthless pieces of paper. And that's essentially what we've got. Those pieces of paper happen to be the reserve currency of the world, and it's been that's pretty good business to take real value and then print fake money in exchange for it.
Don't you think it would be a good business if I were to tell you, okay, you need money. You have the power to print it. I'll print it up for you, though, and I'll charge you for printing, but I'm not going to give you what I've charged you for printing. I'm going to loan it to you at interest.
Yeah.
I'm going to loan you your own money at interest. And then every dollar that we have out here, you reach into your pocket, pull out those Federal Reserve notes. Every one of those appears to be a note from the Federal Reserve to you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's actually a note that we owe a dollar to them.
Right. It's a liability.
It was loaned into circulation. Mm-hmm. It's owed back somewhere down the line. It's owed back. And when you tack interest on it, then it's as though if I were to bank for your poker game and all four of you gave me a $10 bill and I gave each of you 10 white chips. And a deal, though, is that to get your $10 bill back, you've got to give me 11 chips. How many chips are there out there? 40. How many chips are owed back for the $40? 44. There's never enough to pay it back.
It keeps impoverishing the people while making a certain small group of bankers richer, yeah.
In more ways than one. Number one, they have taken all of our money and they've substituted these phony monopoly money. It doesn't represent anything. And I'll give you a good example. Pre-64, Federal Reserve notes had on there that it was legal tender for payment of all debts, public and private, and is redeemable in lawful money at the U.S. Treasury Department or any Federal Reserve bank. Now, what do you mean lawful money? It means something other than what that is. A lawful money is a dollar. A dollar is 371 and a quarter grains of silver. That's the definition of a dollar. When you go into a store and they say, what can I help you with? And you say, I'll have a gallon of milk, please. And do they ever ask you whether you want a large, medium, or small gallon? Well, same thing with dollars. A dollar is a dollar. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you, I've got a dollar in my pocket. Been carrying it for 50-something years, ever since my grandfather gave it to me as a magic dollar. He said if I never spent it, never lost it, I would never be broke. And it works because there have been times whenever that was the only thing between me and being broke, but I've never been broke because I had that dollar. Now, that dollar was minted in 1923, and it was given to me back when guys carried silver dollars around like you carry $1 bills now. I mean, it was common. It was used in currency. It was used in commerce. But in 1923, this dollar I've got in my pocket would buy 10 loaves of bread, wouldn't it?
Right.
Dime a piece, easy.
Sure.
How many would it buy today?
That would buy several.
It would buy at least 10, wouldn't it?
Right.
So a dollar will still buy a dollar's worth today, but it takes 20 Federal Reserve notes to do the same thing.
Exactly. And they've debased the currency through inflation, of course.
Do you realize, look at how much better, minimum wage has gone up over the years, hasn't it?
Right.
Or has it? In 1967 to 8, I went to work my first paycheck job. My first job was working $6 a day for $6 a day in a rice field from can to can. But my first paycheck job was at Sears, making minimum wage $1.60 an hour. Now, if you were to have the same buying power today that I had as a 17, 18-year-old kid that didn't know diddly, selling underwear and socks at minimum wage, in order for you to have the same buying power that kid had, you would have to make $32 an hour.
And minimum wage is only about $8 an hour, so people have once again become poorer.
Right. An hour, you're talking about 20 cents an hour is what they're working for in buying power. But $32 an hour is what it would take to have the same buying power, the same minimum wage I received in 1967 and 8. So that's how they're sapping us down. That's why mama has to go to work.
Sure.
That's why one paycheck is not enough. A lot of them put it off to, kids aren't willing to wait to obtain what mama and daddy spent years obtaining. That's not the case. It takes two paychecks now. And that's why mama isn't home when the kids get there from school. And I'm not sitting here making judgments on any of that, but I am making judgments on the fact that these people have rendered it necessary, and that's got to stop. So they're the second tentacle.
Okay.
The Federal Reserve and the restoration of sound money. As long as you have sound money, you don't have inflation. If you go back in history and look, I mean all the way back in history and look at all the times that we had the dollar based on gold and silver, we didn't have a problem with inflation.
And now we do, of course. Yeah. When we came off the gold standard in 71, that made it a lot worse. But 1913,
the
Federal Reserve.
71, the gold at 33.
Right.
But the silver standard in 71, money became totally unplugged. And they keep throwing water in the soup pot, water in the soup pot, water in the soup pot.
Diluting it.
Yeah, and at some point, that soup is going to get to where it won't sustain economic life. And that's when it all will melt down. And that's where we are now, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's definitely a problem. So the income tax, and let me ask you something back on the income tax tentacle, if you will, for a moment. On your website, you have a book listed in your recommended list there, How Income Tax Causes Crime. Can you just quickly tell us what the concept is behind that?
But I'd like to, before I do that, if it's all right with you, Jason, I'd like to give you, before we forget about this, the way that the Federal Reserve's manipulation of the value of money and the Internal Revenue Service's misapplication of the income tax works as a siphon.
Okay.
All right, here's where it happens. By diluting the value of money, which is just what we were talking about, by putting water in the pot. Give you an example of how bad it is. All of the money, all of the federal money in the world in 1962, when we were still on, you know, a real dollar, you know, 371 and a quarter grains of silver per dollar, was $281 billion. That's all the federal currency in the world, $281 billion. Now they were throwing trillions of dollars around like their 20s.
Right.
So that tells you exactly how much dilution we've been suffering. But what the effect is that you end up buying property. Let's say you buy property for $10,000, and then 5 years later, 10 years later, you sell it for $20,000. You think you've realized a gain. But if you look at the value of the dollars that you'd paid versus the value of the dollars that you sold it for, you'd find that you did good to break even. But they still treat that as though it's a $10,000 profit.
Yeah, so the IRS taxes you on a false gain that isn't really there.
So yeah, so it's almost as silly as this. If you buy a piece of property for $10,000 and you sell it for 20,000 50-cent pieces, then we want a tax of a quarter of that.
Right.
Now, are they going to take out of your profit, or are they going to take out of the property that you started out with?
They're going to take it out of the, well, just the gain after the basis. I mean, you know,
if you had a gain, if you had zero gain, and they take some of that, then they've really taken it out of your starting money, haven't they?
We call this the double tax because the IRS doesn't recognize inflation correctly. And so my antidote for that, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, but I'd love to get your take on it, is the IRS doesn't recognize inflation, which is good and bad, but it also doesn't recognize destruction of debt. And so if you apply a lot of long-term fixed rate debt to that property, and if the property is a rental property where you've outsourced the debt payment to a tenant, then the debt has also been debased, as is the currency and the false gain. So I completely agree with you there. You can beat the system.
You have effectively reduced some of the impact because you have bought property by buying it on credit or by borrowing the money to buy it. You have bought property worth X dollars today at such a value of dollars, but you're paying for it with dollars of lesser value. And so you're actually curving some of the impact of that by buying it on credit. But the siphon still works.
It does work, and yes.
You take a guy who bought, and this is an example, a good friend of mine, Tom Silgus, who is a very, very much in the most authoritative brains on this subject I know, is a guy at 55, buys a house for $13,500. He builds it. Cost him $13,500. 50 years later, he sells it for $175,000. But if you convert that $175,000 back to the $13,500, and by comparing it to how much gold would that buy, how much silver would it buy, and how many dozens of brown eggs would it buy? Now why brown eggs? For some reason or other, an economics professor did some research, and he discovered that the production of brown eggs has tracked the population tick for tick each and every time that there's been a change. There's been an equal change in the production of brown eggs. The supply of brown eggs per person has remained constant over the last 100 years.
That's amazing.
So that makes it a good value measure, you know, because the supply has remained the same. So you find that it takes $175,000 in 2005 to buy as much silver as $13,500 would have. So what he's done is he's broken even. It's $13,500 with $175,000. He just took $175,000 Federal Reserve notes to equal $13,500 real ones. Now, since they call it a gain, they're going to take $4,500 out of his original $13,500. He walks away with $9,000 for his $13,500 investment, thinking he made money because it's expressed in Federal Reserve notes now instead of dollars. It's like if I went down and I sold something for pesos, and I walked away and I said, I paid $10 for this, but I got 20 pesos. I made money. No, you didn't. I don't think you had money. You have to look at the exchange rate. Well, the exchange rate between a dollar and a Federal Reserve note dollar is 20 to 1. Pesos are worth more than dollars now. So now you ask about the other, but that's how the Federal Reserve and the income tax are used together to siphon off the wealth of the middle class. The whole idea behind Jekyll Island, and since you had Edward Griffin on, was to how do we solve this problem with this middle class having all of this prosperity when they really aren't the ones who know what really should be done with money. They don't deserve to have money. This is a problem because money is now getting hung up in the middle class, and it's not coming back to us. And this is wrong. And so the Federal Reserve System was set up to correct that, and that's how they do it. They're siphoning off the middle class. The wealth out of the middle class is being bled. It is just like going to the blood bank every Friday and giving a pint of blood. At some point, they're going to have to start carrying you down there. And that's where we are now.
Catherine Austin Fitz calls that the slow burn. And, you know, it's kind of like how do you boil a frog? You put it in lukewarm water and turn up the heat real slow, and that's what they're doing.
Right. Crank it up, and he'll lay there and
you got it.
Die.
He'll just become complacent slowly,
right,
and comfortable. Yeah.
Well, you know, a professor of mine, Jason, back in college, a fellow by the name of Georg Feitling. He was born in Feitling, Austria. He was a doctor of languages. He taught me German. And he was part of the German resistance during pre-war and war, World War II Germany. He was part of the organization, just like the French resistance, but except that it was in Germany. And as a matter of fact, there was a death warrant issued for him as a result of the July 20, 1944 attempt to kill Hitler by blowing his pants off. I think they made a movie, Valkyrie, or something like that, because that was the name of the project, Operation Valkyrie. I think they made a movie about it recently.
Right, I believe so.
Well, he was involved in that, and there was a death warrant issued, and they smuggled him out of the country, the underground smuggled him out of the country at the time, and he came over to America, and he stayed here ever since. Well, he was talking to me one day, and he said, Mr. Cryer, he said, I worry about your country. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, in Germany, he said, we didn't just go out and have a vote, or we're going to have a dictatorship. We didn't just go out and wake up one morning, and we were under a totalitarian regime. He said, it all happened little by little. He said, they would take a little freedom, or they'd take a little liberty, but not enough to fight over. And then they'd take a little more, but not enough to fight over.
Slippery slope.
They would chip it away, just like boiling your frog you're talking about. Chip it away, but never enough to fight over until one morning we woke up, we didn't have enough freedom left to fight with, and they took that. And he said, I see the same thing happening in your country. This was in 1968.
Wow, and it's gotten so much worse since then.
Yes, and I've seen it coming, and I thought there was nothing I could do about it, but now that I realize that there is a freedom movement out there, there are millions of Americans out there that are really terribly concerned. They see that it's going wrong. Now, would you like me to address the book by Sam Bryant about income tax causes crime that you asked me about? Now,
sure.
I have not answered your question all this time.
Yes, thank you. That would be great. Tell us about that.
Sam Bryant is a tree surgeon in Tennessee, and he was noticing that the country as a whole was beginning to deteriorate, that the moral fiber of the country was beginning to decay. He was seeing more crime. He was seeing more problems, social ailments, what he called them. And so what he did was he decided he had to find out what it was all about. Now, this guy is not a tax honesty member of the tax honesty. He has no axe to bear. But he started looking for problems the same way he would do if he was trying to diagnose the problem with a tree. And he said, well, a tree starts to succumb to parasites or to disease, there's usually some stressor that has been introduced into the environment of the tree that is causing it to be unable to fight the disease or the parasite. And so he looks first to see what's causing this tree to be stressed. And that's how he tracks the problem now. He's applying the same reasoning to our criminal, our problem, our crime rate. And he started looking around for different stressors. And he was saying, what could be putting the American family or the American society under a load, and he started looking at all kinds of things. But what he ended up coming up with was the income tax burden, and he got hold of the statistics from the government on the crime rate and the statistics from the government on the tax burden on a family of four from the income tax. He also took statistics from several states on their income tax and compared, and the states didn't work. There didn't seem to be a connection there. But on the federal end, with a federal income tax burden, there was a... Now, stop for a second here and look at the significance of this. In social scientific studies, any correlation or direct correlation, you know, that is tied of 0.4 or greater is considered as proof of a direct causal relationship. Now, the correlation between, in other words, how close do they match? When one goes up, does the other go up? When the other when it goes down, does the other go down with it? And that's what they mean by correlation. Correlation between the income tax burden and the crime rate was 0.9 something.
So more than double.
0.4. Yeah. We're talking about an absolute certainty of a cause. And when you look at the charts in his book and you compare the two, you cannot tell them apart. Every increase is met with a measurable increase in the crime rate, and it's to the point to where it is every single move not only created an increase, but a measurable, predictable increase. And every move down created the very same result in a downward move in the crime rate. So he started looking at other problems. What about the divorce rate? He compared that. Same thing. Look at the charts on divorce rates, and you find that it matches the tax burden for the income tax. Now, why didn't the states do that? So he started looking at different taxes, and he researched that out, and he realized that state income taxes have a commensurate offsetting impact on the standard of living, on the services, on the quality of life of the people who pay the tax, whereas federal income taxes go out of the state. They don't just go out of town. They don't just go out of the county. They go out of the state. The public never sees any change in their lifestyle or in their standard of living as a result of paying a federal tax. So it's what he calls a vacant tax. Now, he also then turned around and checked. I said, well, what about child abuse? You know, if it's causing stress to families and that means that they're committing crimes and that means that families are breaking up, what about child abuse? So he goes back and he gets the same statistics, the same things from the same source. This is all, his source is all from the government. So it's from their own mouths that they're convicted. And he finds that child abuse rate, you know, reported child abuse rate tracks the tax, income tax burden perfectly. And then he went in and said, well, what about teen pregnancies? He came up with a very same thing. And when you look at these charts, Jason, you're sitting there with your jaw hanging out because they are absolutely identical. It's incredible that they are absolutely identical. And these charts are not his. This isn't him crunching numbers.
No, it's the government's numbers.
You've heard the old thing about liars figure and figures lie.
Right.
But this is the government's own figures.
Sure.
Now, he did wonder about one other thing. He wanted to know, because he knew that the government was bad at twisting people's tails whenever they weren't getting enough money out of them. So he wondered, just how does the tax burden affect the suicide rate? So he gets his friend that's helping him do this. A friend is a retired CIA man whose primary job for many years was to dig and root up information like this from within the government records and statistics and data. He was a data miner, you know, with the CIA for many years from inside the government and in other governments. So he went out and he tried to get the information, issued a FOIA. They came back and said, we have that information.
That's a Freedom of Information Act request, right?
Yeah. And how many people, what are the statistics on people who included reference to the income tax in their suicide notes?
Oh, now, my gosh.
I wouldn't figure they'd have those statistics,
I wouldn't figure there'd be many people that would cite that as a something to put in their note, but go ahead, tell us.
Well, it wouldn't seem even to me that they would have a way of keeping those stats, or that they would have them. But come to find out in the response is that they do have those statistics, but they refuse to provide them because that information is, get this, classified, unquote. Now, how could you classify that? How does that have anything to do with national security?
Yeah, I can't.
How could you possibly justify calling that classified information? Because it's not sensitive for national defense. It's just sensitive for our image.
It's sensitive for convicting the government of its own crimes is what it
That's
is.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the government taking the Fifth.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm curious, though, on the state income tax versus the federal income tax that you mentioned a few minutes ago. You call the federal income tax a vacant tax because it leaves the area and people don't see any improvement after paying it.
Sam Bryant, the author of the book.
Right, right. I know. Yep. And you're just summarizing his work. But
right.
I'm curious, though, was he saying that the state income tax actually improved life? Because, you know, sort of the concept I'm getting here is the state's rights, the local, not national, is better.
Well, taxes paid to the state cause a lot of things to happen. For example, buildings for education, libraries, streets or highways, bridges, things that the state provides these services and this infrastructure. chapter 4 come back as a result of a state tax. And so I can see that. Now, the state income tax does suffer from many of the same difficulties that the federal income tax does. For one, most of them are tied directly to the federal income tax. Well, that's like hitching your wagon to a dead horse and saying, giddy up. It's just a question of the horse, you know, is refusing to fall down, even though it's dead. And they know that. Louisiana Department of Revenue is fully aware of the problem, for example, that they have with their tying their state income tax to the federal income tax, because they realize the federal income tax is fatally flawed.
It is amazing. So we've got to wrap up here, Tom, but are there any other tentacles that Truth Attack is really trying to work on besides sound money, you know, the Federal Reserve issue and the income tax?
Well, the income tax is tentacle number one. You know, whenever you're wanting to strike at the tree of tyranny, you know, I don't remember who it was, I think it was Thoreau, it said that thousands flail at the limbs, well, only a few chop at the roots. We're going to chop at the roots with that. Then to take out the Fed is the second tentacle, and restoration of sound money would come with that. The third tentacle that we have is get on priorities, and that is to restore, after restoring the sanctity of the working man and woman and his God-given right to earn a living, which rights, by the way, are not taxable in this country. And people just don't realize, because they're not taught in civics class, and I wasn't even taught in law school, that we have a fundamental right to earn a living through our own labor. So when we're working, we're exercising a right, the same as you and I are exercising our freedom of expression today. Neither is taxable. But once we've restored that, then to go after the Fed and get it out of the way, get these foreign bankers. Half of the people who own controlling interest in the Federal Reserve are foreign and would love to see the demise of this country. And restore sound money. The next is to secure the minds of our children, and that is to do away with Department of No Child Allowed Ahead. Now,
is that the NEA?
Control of our educational system. The federal government has dumbed people down.
They sure have.
And numbed people down. They've changed their idea, and they've substituted even completely changed the definition of freedom. Is it freedom? Is freedom from responsibility for yourself?
Yep.
As opposed to freedom is full responsibility for yourself without having to answer to anybody except your maker. We have to redefine that, and partly, you know, what we have to do is get the federal government out of our local schools where they have no business. You've seen the Constitution, Jason. Can you show me any government regulation of education clause in Article 1, Section 8?
I sure can't. I'm no constitutional scholar, but, you know, the government is using the school system.
What about regulating agriculture?
They've so far gone beyond the original design of the country. It's not even funny, but...
And what it is they're getting into things that we could do best.
Of course they are.
They could do least.
Right.
Who's better to educate our children, them or us? Who's better to say what is best for Louisiana's environment? Somebody in Montana or somebody in Louisiana?
Yeah. The federal government is...
What does Louisiana know about hard rock mining in Wyoming?
Sure, yeah.
Why should we have any say in that? You know, what does somebody in Idaho know about coastal erosion? So why does that representative and that senator have something to say about our environment? Everything is, you know, the whole idea, the concept behind our Constitution was for the states to remain free, separate, and independent.
That's why we're called a republic.
And for the federal government to only do those things and perform those functions that needed to be performed as a whole. It was an agency, the government. And it was only given certain powers, just like when you give somebody a power of attorney to do a certain thing, then they come out and they sell your house. I wasn't there. What would you do about it? Sit back and say, well, at least I'm free of that house.
Yeah, I know.
That's what we've done.
It's beyond ridiculous. It really is. Well, Tom, just in closing, what do we do about it? Give people some action steps, if you would. I think people, since the election of Comrade Obama, I think people are really much more aware of this than they ever have been.
Less aware of what to do about it than they've ever been.
That's what I want you to say. Give us a few quick steps.
All right. A few quick steps. That is why we've been watching the Tea Party phenomenon here, and it's wonderful. But what they're doing is they're getting up and making a lot of noise. Now, when I was a kid, I grew up on a farm, and every now and then we would take a couple of pigs down and have them, quote, processed, unquote, which is a euphemism for slaughtered and butchered. In order to put a pig on a trailer, you grab him by the hind legs, and when you do, he screams to high heaven. He makes a god-awful racket, but he gets on the trailer because when you push him forward like a wheelbarrow, he's not going to fall on his face, so he walks, and you walk him right on up on the trailer, right? Now, Or you do like some Americans, you hold a bushel with some corn in the bottom and let him get a taste of it, then you lead him into the trailer. But once he gets on the trailer, he's pork chops. He's had it. Now, Americans have been falling for the same thing. But now they're starting to squeal. Now they're starting to feel the pain, and right. They're beginning to squeal. But the thing is, they don't know what to do. Well, those pigs should have been doing a lot more squealing. They should have been kicking. For the last three or four generations, we have trusted our elected and our appointed officials with restraining themselves and governing the government, when really the ultimate responsibility for that is us as citizens. Years ago, an American citizen could go anywhere in the world, and he was afforded a great deal of respect. They may have hated his guts. They might not have liked him because he's pushy or loud or he's rude or he doesn't meet their social graces, but they respected the hell out of him. Why? Because they knew that he ruled the most powerful, the most prosperous, and the most generous nation in the world. And he was one of the rulers. He was received like a head of state. You don't see that now. And the reason is that we have neglected our role as citizens, and we have lost the art of citizenry, what I call lost art of citizenry. We've forgotten, you know, our appointed and elected officials have forgotten that we're the boss, and they've started thinking they are. The servant is now taking over the household. But we have forgotten how to be the boss. How to crack the whip over our insolent and indifferent servants' heads. And so we're going to be going on a tour. Truth Attack is going on a tour of Florida. And along that tour, we're going to be conducting 10 seminars on the lost art of citizenry. How to crack the whip over the heads of our insolent and indifferent servants. What is it that a congressman listens to? What is it that pops his ears up and makes him start thinking, I better go that way? How do you make the wind blow your way? How do you stop the wind from blowing the wrong way? In other words, we're going to be teaching people how to assert and exert the power that only an American citizen possesses, but that we have forgotten how to use. And that's important. With that, basically, to give you an idea of what it entails, is that we're calling these the altar seminars. You got to, first off, if you want to change things, you first have to change what you're doing. You can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. That's what Einstein called insanity. So you have to alter yourself first. And that alters is an acronym. It stands for ally yourself with others of like mind. Strength in numbers, safety in numbers, and it's a force multiplier. Second is learn. You can't explain something you don't know. You can't defend something you don't know. You don't have any rights that you're not aware of, because just as Franklin said, a man who doesn't know his rights has none. So learn your rights, learn the restrictions on the government, and learn what the remedies are. Teach. Spread the word to your neighbors, your fellow workers, your family, your people that you run into, to the general public through letters to the editor, through articles and whatnot. How to spread the word to the public. That's teach, ALT now. E, exert your power now. You know what you're talking about. You've got numbers behind you. Now it's time to exert pressure on that elected official. Make him know that no matter how big and fat the envelopes are that are coming across his breakfast table every morning from lobbyists, that there ain't going to be no more breakfast. There's not going to be any more fat envelopes after this next November if you don't do this. We're going to be issuing, at the finale rally of this Florida tour we're calling Tea Party Squared, in the last week of October, first week of November. And people who are interested in that can find out about it at teapartysquared.com. One word, teapartysquared.com. At the finale rally, we're going to issue four awards to four congressmen called the Amok Awards, America's Most Unwanted Congressmen. And we're going to focus the entire freedom movement on those four little congressional districts. We're going to be pushing their challenger, and we're going to be shoving them down, pulling them under, both at the same time. And we're going to take those four guys out. But before we do, we're going to tell the entire Congress, these four guys have been given the Amok Award, and they won't be here after the next election.
What is the Amok Award?
Amok Award, America's Most Unwanted Congressman Award.
That's great.
Truth Attack. And we're going to have two pictures of them on it. One of them's going to be from the front, one's going to be a profile, just like my mugshot.
Okay.
And what we're going to do is go after them for a full year and expose everything that they've ever done wrong. And we're going to push the challenger and the entire, across the country, we're going to be getting the entire freedom movement to send money and to those that are close enough to go in and volunteer to walk neighborhoods or to push carts at churches and malls or to man the phones or to drive people or put out signs. In other words, we're going to provide all the manpower we can gather to support that challenger. We're going to take that incumbent out of office, which is a major, major accomplishment. But first, we're going to call the shot. We're going to tell all of Congress about the award and that they're going to take these four guys out. Now, once we do that, then we're going to go back to Congress and say, see, we told you we were going to take them out, and they're gone now. You, by the way, we wanted to let you know we're on the short list for next year's awards.
Right. So you give you put some fear in them that people are paying attention here and people
That's
are fed up.
It's called cracking the whip.
Right, exactly.
Of citizenship. It's being citizens instead of peasants. And that's what it's going to take. Citizens are going to have to relearn how to use the tools and weapons that only American citizens have.
Right. And we take for granted.
Yeah. And we take for granted to the point to where we've lost them, but they're still there. We just need to learn how to use them again.
Sure.
And so that's why Truth Attack is going to be out there putting on these 10 big seminars. We're bringing in the best of the best. We're bringing in people that know what they're talking about each area. I spent 25 years wading through the political trenches in the mud and the blood. God only knows what else is down in there. And so I learned about what is it that makes politicians tick. Most people will think, well, is it right or is it wrong? Is it just, is it unjust? They don't care about that. All they care about is do they keep their power or do they get more power?
They just want to expand their power and grow their influence. That's all.
That's it. You know? Now, but if they're given a choice between no power and less power, they'll take less. And so that's where you have to give them to change their choices. But that takes a change on our part first. We've got to change ourselves. We've got to start taking responsibility for ourselves and each other so that we don't need a nanny government. They can't argue that we need health care from them. We can't argue that we need housing from them. We can't argue that we need food from them. Already they've taken over the food supply through the Department of Agriculture that has regulated the farming family out of business.
And that's why it's all become this
corporation business.
It's become big centralized corporatocracy controlling all our agriculture, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. And how does that make you feel? Secure?
Yeah. No, not at all. I can't wait to see the movie Food, Inc. I want to get Michael Pollan on my show because there's some really interesting stuff going on there that's very, very scary.
You could look at it this way, too. In 1930, whenever the Depression started, the 30s, whenever it was going on, 80% of the people in this country were living in a rural environment where they were at least capable of feeding themselves.
Yeah, now they're all crammed into the cities and they can't.
And they couldn't find a potable glass of water if their life depended on it.
Not without the government.
The government and each other that we can prey upon. So if you've been putting silver back, you better have some lead to go with it.
Yep. And what you mean there is bullets.
Yeah, that's right.
Couldn't agree more. Well, good stuff, Tom. Keep up the good work. Times are a-changing. They are getting scary. There's a lot of fear out there, but I appreciate people like you.
We can still save it, Jason.
Yeah, I know we can.
It's not gone. I will tell you, in parting, what the parting would result in losing it to where we could not get it back through its own system. And if we can't get it back through its own system, there's only one way to get it back, and I'm working real hard not to have that necessary.
And that's a bloody revolution, and we don't want to have that.
That's a bloody revolution. Yeah. That's what we're going to leave our kids if we don't fix it now.
I know.
But we still have a threat of an attachment to Congress.
Yeah, we do.
We can regain control of Congress, and once we regain control of Congress, we can use Congress's grasp of the purse strings to get the White House and the Supreme Court even back into line. But that then threat that we have attached to Congress is our right to vote them out. However, if they ever obtain and ever achieve a universal electronic voting system that can be pre-programmed to make whatever result come out and then erase itself, and all of this can be done, then they won't need us anymore. It won't be impossible for us to vote them out and impossible for us to elect a successor that they haven't chosen and anointed. And so the oligarchy will be totally disconnected from the public. And the public will have only one. You know, we don't have the soapbox. We don't have the jury box. We don't have the ballot box. The only thing we got left is the ammo box.
Yeah, and we don't want to go there. Yeah.
To not go there.
Absolutely.
I'm working real hard to not go there.
Well, folks listening, this is a call. Wake up, America. You've got to get involved. Times now are getting very scary. And Tom, I appreciate groups like yours and your dedication to this. You're really doing a good thing for people. So, folks, support the websites. Go to truthattack.org.
Truthattack.org. TeaPartySquared.com.
Excellent. Good. Tom Cryer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jason.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.